You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 103. The opener is finally here. We are looking ahead to opening day by looking back at the futures game played at Nationals Park between their minor and major leaguers. And we've got interviews for you. Fresh conversations with Mike Rizzo, Davey Martinez, opening day starter Josiah Gray, and Dylan Cruz. All coming up on Bustin' Loose Baseball right now.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
This is Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 103. One last ride before the start of the 2024 season. Opening day for the Nationals in Cincinnati is finally here. Toby Altizer, Grant Paulson, producer Darris Dameron. Toby, the wait is over. It's baseball season.
It's finally good. We're going to get to watch baseball. We've broken down a lot of different things. We've talked about a lot of different things, but we're finally going to talk about the things that really matter in this sport, the wins and losses by the big league club. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the young prospects, but a lot to be excited about. Baseball is finally back.
All right, let's start real quick with the futures game on Tuesday at Nats Park. You and I were there. We had great seats right behind home plate to watch a bunch of the prospects. What stood out? Who deserves to be called out here positively?
So we'll start with two guys on the prospect side, which is probably the side you guys care more about if you're listening to our podcast. TJ White stood out, 2-for-4 on the day, hit the one of the two home runs hit. Eddie Rosario hit the other one for the big league club. TJ White brought in the sole run for the prospects, and he looked fantastic. 2-for-4 on the day, like I said, a home run. Also made a really good play at first base to pick a ball in the dirt to complete a double play. So I thought TJ White looked really good, similar to what he had done in the spring breakout game. So he continues the last, you know, good couple of weeks of spring training. Also, the guy that stood out to me was Harlene Susana. I mean, he looked fantastic in an inning. He struck out two guys. He was one pitch away from an immaculate inning. He threw like 101 mile an hour fastball that Jacob Young was able to foul off. And then Jacob Young ended up putting a weak ground ball to second base. He only ended up with two strikeouts in the inning, but he threw a couple of sliders to Joe Gallo and then pumped 102.4 by him. So he looked fantastic in an inning of work, and they're going to continue to work him as a starter, but I think long-term he's going to end up as a reliever, and that dude is going to be lights out because it's easy gas and not just like 97, 98, like 102, 103 gas. So I'm excited about him, and I think we do need to point this out on the big league side. Joey Meneses was a home run shy of the cycle in the game. He had a triple, which I think is even more shocking than not having a homer for Joey Meneses. Having a triple to start the game, he had a double and a single. He looked really good at the plate. So the big thing for him, I really do think this is kind of a pivotal season for him. He's just got to be able to drive in some runs, and he was able to do that today, a homer shy of the cycle. But Joey Meneses looked good at the plate today as well.
Yeah, just to go back through a couple of those guys. So TJ White's not a name we talk about on the show a whole lot. He's kind of down the system in terms of their top 30 on MLB Pipeline. Before they made the Soto deal and added a couple draft classes and traded all the veterans the last couple of years that they have at the deadline for prospects that filled up the system, TJ White was one of those guys like Jeremy De La Rosa type who was, you know, one of their best prospects in a terrible system. But what I've liked about him is he's always one of the youngest players at his level, and oftentimes by a few years. He's only 20 years old. He'll be 20 all of this season, and he'll be playing for a good chunk of the year, presumably at AA. He had an outstanding 2022 two seasons ago when he was just a 18-year-old in A-ball at Fredericksburg. Last year in Wilmington, which is not a great place for hitters, frankly, in about 80 games as a 19-year-old in A-plus ball, he had a terrible year. He hit about 170. His power dissipated largely. His walks were down. His strikeouts were up. So it was a really disappointing season. But to see him put the barrel to the ball that he did today and go opposite field, like line drive home run that basically was not dropping when it hit the seats. I mean, it was still basically just a flat missile into the left center bleachers. Pretty amazing for a left-handed bat at the time. He's a switch hitter, but a first base type who still has a chance, I think, eventually to end up being a big league ball player. You mentioned Susana. Electric, man. What else can you say? This is the dream from a ceiling standpoint. If he becomes a reliever, it's innings like the one we saw today at Nats Park. You mentioned it. 102.4. I mean, that kind of velocity doesn't exist. There are you can count the guys on one hand on the planet that can do that, and to fool, you know, a couple of big leaguers and just blow them away basically with strikeouts, 1-2-3 inning. You mentioned he was a foul tip away from an immaculate inning. That was just sexy all the way around from Susana, who he sprays the ball. Let's face it. I mean, his walk rate last year in the minors was 5.7 per nine for his career, is 5.0 per nine. But if he can throw the ball over the plate, which he did, just pumping strikes on that Nats Park mound, hopefully a sign of things to come, he can absolutely be a lights-out, late-inning, high-leverage reliever for this team. He's only 20. Came over in the Soto deal from the Padres 2 years ago, touched 103 a bunch in his debut, and he really hasn't lost that velocity one inning at a time. As a starter, he's mostly like 97 to 99, can reach back for extra. But I wanted to see him dominate more. A, he's got to throw more strikes. But like last year, Toby, in the minors, and this was in Fredericksburg in A-ball, not even A-plus ball, 62 Ks in 63 innings. Now, he only gave up 56 hits, which tells you guys don't really see it and can't really hit the velo when he throws it over the plate. But like to strike out 8.9 per nine when you're throwing one, you just saw today what it looks like. I mean, that shouldn't be the case. So it's a huge, huge year for him in terms of his development coming up as a 20-year-old. He'll be getting A-plus and maybe double-A ball by the end of the year. I just wonder, they're obviously going to keep having him start, because you do that until you can't anymore, essentially. But do they still think in the back of their minds that he can be a starter, or are they just envisioning him as their closer of the future? I really would love to know that.
Yeah, I think it's funny you mentioned him being a little bit wild. So we saw Lane Thomas look into the dugout a couple of times because Jackson Rutledge threw inside, and it was a little close for comfort, especially just 2 days ahead of opening day. And so Lane Thomas looked into the dugout like, what are we doing here? He was a little frustrated. I think one ended up in a walk, and he kind of slammed down some of his stuff for the bat boy to come grab. Well, to start off Harleen Susana's inning, Joey Gallo's out there standing just to get an idea of what he's about to face. And Susana throws the first pitch as a fastball, and he throws it so it goes back to the backstop. The catcher couldn't get it. It was in the left-handed batter's box, and immediately Joey Gallo peeked back into the first base dugout like, what are we doing here? And then Harleen Susana proceeds to strike him out on three pitches, strikes the next guy out on three pitches, and was 0-2 on Jacob Young. So he's one of those guys that I don't know that you're ever going to get that wildness out of him. He's always going to be all over the place, but can you get him in there a little bit so that he can be one of the pitchers that is considered effectively wild? Like, he's never going to be a comfortable at bat when he's throwing 102, and you might know just as much where it's going as he does. But if he can just at least get it around the plate and not walk guys, he's never going to be a comfortable at bat, and he can get you through an inning. And I think he can be an electric guy, whether it's as a closer, whether it's a late inning guy. I think he's going to be an electric reliever. It's just, can he dial it in a little bit more than he has? And I think today it showed you a little bit of what he can be.
Good to see James Wood left on left against Mackenzie Gore in the first inning. Hit a double the other way. We saw Dylan Cruz get his first hit at Nationals Park, in air quotes. Same with Robert Hassel. Those guys combined for 3-for-7, top of the order. Andrew Pinckney, the fourth-round pick from Alabama, came off the bench to get a base hit as well. Christian Vaccaro got a hit in the game. So there was a lot to like, even though the prospects overall got destroyed in a 13-to-1 game. But they did have 10 hits. Just couldn't bring runners home when they got him aboard. Mackenzie Gore was nasty, by the way. 4 innings, scoreless ball, 7 strikeouts. I know he was facing a minor league lineup, but the stuff played, man. 98 fastball, had 3 pitches working, was locating on the corners, really looked like he was dialed in. So that was very, very good to see.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
See you later. I wanted to mow through some of these conversations we had about some of the big decisions that have been made for the Nationals here recently. We were at the red carpet event at the Anthem over on the wharf in D.C. right after the Futures game on Tuesday. We caught up with a bevy of folks you'll want to hear from, including the president of the Nationals, Mike Rizzo. We ended up getting into why Trey Lipscomb did not make the big league roster with Rizzo. Here was that conversation. We're joined now by Mike Rizzo, the president of baseball operations for the Washington Nationals, as they are walking the red carpet. Rizzo getting ready to make his way in to the Anthem for this annual gala. Mike, you look great as always. Good to see you again.
Thank you, guys. It's a nice night to dress up for a good cause.
Right? You guys do a lot. This has become a kind of a must-attend event for Nats fans. Very, very cool for them to get the opportunity to see everybody walking in. But it is for a really good cause, as you mentioned, as well.
Oh, definitely. You know, what the philanthropies do for with the Nationals is outstanding. And Marla Tannenbaum is the driver behind that. And what she has done and her group have done throughout this throughout the history of the Nationals is immense. It's incredible and really not spoken about it enough, in my opinion.
So the preamble today, I think, is so cool. I love that this is what's happening now. I love that you guys are doing this. The kids get a chance to, like, James Wood has a big league base hit in a major league ballpark. You know, kids are throwing from the big league mound, recording their first strikeout in a major league park. I think this is so awesome. What's your favorite part about today, the preamble, the kids versus the big leaguers?
I just, you see them in their future environment. Yeah. I think that's what it's all about. There's none of these guys, you know, Cruzy and Woody, they're not awed by, you know, Nationals Park or any baseball field. Mm-hmm. They've been there, done that. They've been through a lot of events and that type of thing. But it's good for them to see the dimensions, see the ballpark, see the angles and that type of thing. And it was just fun to see all the prospects that you hear about, from low A rookie league prospects to guys that are, you know, sniffing the big leagues together on one team, you know, playing against the big league team.
Yeah, that was amazing today over at Nats Park, including Arlene Susana. I mean, he looked like a big league closer, touched 102. Phil had a plus breaking ball, struck out the side, nearly messed around, had an immaculate inning. That kind of stole the show a little bit there.
Yeah, you know, he's flashed that before. He's got a big league changeup also that he didn't break out today. But he's a 3-pitch guy that has incredible stuff. That's a very young, inexperienced pitcher that we've got to log innings to. And we're going to run him out there every 5 days and get his reps in and get his work in.
You guys made the final roster decision today. Trey Lipscomb was sent down to the minor leagues. Mm-hmm.
There was some growing speculation maybe he'd make the roster as the opening day second baseman. Didn't happen. Why not?
Well, he made it tough for us to send him down, didn't he? Which is a testament to him. He's a good ball player. He's going to be a good big leaguer in the near future. We felt that, you know, he logged a lot of innings. His whole career he's played third base. We threw him at second base at the beginning of spring training. Took to it like a duck out of water. But we want him to experience some more live games at second base. And you know, he had about 400 at bats or so, or, you know. He's only had about 400 at-bats or so above the Double-A level. So we're sending him to Triple-A. We're sending James Wood to Triple-A and get their feet wet and send you know, the rest of those really good prospects to Harrisburg for a short period of time and get them all together again in Triple-A.
For this roster that you guys have constructed opening up this Thursday, what are you most comfortable with? And what's the one thing you go, I'm not sure about this, how this is going to go?
Well, you know, it's all about the pitching for me. You know, starting pitching is king, and you know, can we control the strike zone? Can we command the baseball? Can we get deeper in the games than we did last year? That takes the onus off a bullpen. So it's always starting pitching for me. It's always my favorite part of the game. It's always the most worrisome part of the game. You never have enough. You never have, you know, good enough or the quantity enough. And we're looking for those guys to take their next step forward in their progression as big league starting pitchers. Now they pitched, you know, incredibly good for us last year, you know, taking the next step. They all finished the season in great standing. You know, they logged more innings than they ever have. They finished the season somewhere between 27 and 30 starts, which is what we wanted to do. This year, training wheels are off for those young starters. Every fifth day or so, they're going to take the ball and see if they can make another progression to becoming a real elite major league rotation.
Last thing, Mike, with some of the top guys you sent down, could they be up pretty quickly if they prove they're ready, or do you view it as maybe later into the season? What's your mindset?
You know, I've always had an open mind about that. You know, we've brought up 19-year-old guys and 28-year-old guys, you know, to make their big league debut. So, you know, I always there's no blueprint or timetable for when you get to the big leagues. But you know, we always say that if you get brought up to the big leagues when you've mastered your level in the minor leagues, when you're acquiring him to the big league level will impact a team and also increase your developmental curve at the big league level. So I think when that happens, we're certainly not afraid to call up anybody. And we've shown in the past that chronological age has really nothing to do with it.
Toby, you and I both were leaning toward the idea that he was going to make it. It certainly seemed like it to me. It's odd that they would have kept him up, so to speak, when they sent all the other guys down, because they all kept playing in games. So there wasn't really a rhyme or reason to doing that. But clearly he made it really hard, as Rizzo said, and they were considering it until the final minutes, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and it's tough because you look at some of the other guys that ended up making it. You know, Nick Senzel, he was always going to be the third baseman. We teased the idea that maybe, but he was kind of always going to be the third baseman. Luis Garcia was always going to get at least one more shot. And Nassim Nunez, he was kind of the guy that we had alluded maybe they'd move on from. Even today, he made a nice defensive play in the Futures game. He made a really good play. I think it went off of Rutledge. He comes over, makes a play, has a great arm over there, shortstop. So he's a guy that showed you maybe his bat's never going to be the best major league bat, but he can give you solid defense. He can obviously run as well. So I think the guys are going to get their shots at the big league level, but they also have to understand that Trey Lipscomb's right there. It's not like, you know, if Garcia goes and he's lollygagging or he's playing poorly, Lipscomb can be called right away and brought up. So just because he didn't make it the opening day roster doesn't mean he's not going to be at Nats Park pretty soon.
Yeah, he's going to, just like Dylan Cruz and James Wood and Brady House, be at Nats Park hopefully at some point this season. And in Lipscomb's case, I think that's a certainty after he hit 400 in spring training. One of the guys that was a big fan of Trey Lipscomb and pretty clearly was advocating on his behalf publicly suggested he deserves to be on the roster, that he had kind of earned it, so to speak. Manager Davey Martinez, we spoke with him as he was getting ready to go to the Welcome Home Gala for the Nationals, decked out in a nice suit at the red carpet event.
Davey Martinez, the skipper of the Nationals, and he brought out the bling.
It's custom.
The 2019 World Series ring. You don't wear it often, but when you do,
I don't wear it often.
It shines bright.
Yeah.
How are you?
I love it though. Right? Love it. Yeah. I'm doing good. Doing good. Hey, we made it through spring training. Boys look good. They're fired up, so we're excited.
McKenzie looked nasty today.
Filth.
Yeah, he was. Hey, he's gonna be okay. He's gonna be okay. He's got a little bit more confidence. He's understanding what he wants to do out there, so he's gonna be fine.
What were you happiest with? All-encompassing spring training, like, hey, this progress was made or this goal was set and we reached. Give me something that you said, you know what, we did a good job in that area.
So, hey, for me, it was the growth of our players, especially like the Ruiz, the Abrams, the Gore, the Grays, the Irvins. Those guys, you know, last year they learned a lot about what they can and can't do. Mm-hmm. And this spring training, they really honed in on what they wanted to do, and it was really good.
Speaking of the kids, you got to feel great about how the prospects performed. That whole little area of the clubhouse, right, with James, Dylan, Brady House, Trey Lipscomb almost messed around and made the team.
Yeah.
I mean, really just an impressive spring.
It's been awesome. It's been awesome. Hey, we got some good ones. We really do. I mean, these kids, they're hungry. They want to be up here. They're pushing to be up here, as you can see, this spring. So they're coming, you know, so they'll – but we're excited about what's going to happen here, but I'm really excited about the team that we're going to put together this year on opening day.
You mentioned K-Bear Ruiz, who's come a long way already. What's kind of next for him in terms of his growth as an everyday player? I mean, broke out offensively to a degree last year, I think. I know he's worked so hard defensively. What's kind of his next step, do you think?
The next thing is what he really worked on all winter is handling our pitching staff. I mean, you know, his performance behind the plate. He made it a point to really hone in on his catching skills and really learn our pitching staff. He showed up this winter before we got to camp twice a week, and really we studied videos. He did all this stuff by himself and worked diligently to get better.
He gave Josiah Gray the nod on opening day. First time he's going to get that opportunity after an all-star appearance last year. Take us inside that decision, kind of supplanting Corbin in that way. It feels like a little bit of a changing in the guard in the rotation.
Yeah, it was, hey, you know, for me, he was an all-star last year. He pitched well. I wanted to give him the next level kind of thing. So he gets opening day. Corbin, you know, he accepted him pitching number two. We got Irvin pitching three. Gore's going to do the home opener, and then Trevor will pitch five. So I feel good about it. Josiah's accepted it. He's excited about it. I think he's going to do just fine.
I think looking at the schedule, you guys only need one, like, fifth starter opportunity for the first few weeks. Will you still use all five of them just to save some innings on the younger arms, or will you go four where you can?
We're looking at what's going to transpire, you know. We want to win games too, right? So we're looking at all that stuff. So we haven't decided yet how we're going to use Trevor in the early part of the season. But we're going to look at all that stuff, and then we'll go from there.
Let's go. And David Martinez with us here on Grant and Danny. How much better of a manager are you right now than when you first got on the job, do you think?
Hey, you know, it's funny because these guys say, "What? You always seem so calm." And some of the guys that had me before, like Robles and Corbin, uh-huh. I said, he's that same guy. He's always been that guy, you know. But, you know, they always say, don't piss him off.
Right. Don't poke the bear.
Yeah. So, you know, I learned over the years as a player and then as a coach. You know, I learned from Joe, you know, to understand who you are and what you want to do and stick to the process, right? I mean, the process is fearless to me. So, and that's what I do every day.
Have you adapted in any way in the sense, because you're right, I mean, you are the same guy every day. The guys that I know, the veterans say that, kids say that. That consistency, I think, helps people, you know, sort of get comfortable in what's one of the hardest jobs in the world, right? Is there something that you've learned, though, maybe about pushing a certain guy's buttons a certain way? Like, some guy needs a swift kick in the butt. Some guy needs a carrot. Like, have you learned in that regard?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I don't do anything in front of a whole group.
Right.
I do everything kind of back door, one-on-one conversations. I've learned that, hey, when you get someone one-on-one, you really get their attention. If you do it in a group, you got about 5 seconds to get your point across,
yeah. And
it's over, you know. So, but I get my point across. And these guys, you know, I've talked to a lot of guys already this spring about what we're looking for and what we're trying to – and their expectations. And they've been good, you know. And I can honestly say Louis is one of them, right? We all know that. Hey, This is 4 years for him. He needs to step it up a little bit, and we need him. And I think he could do it. I really do.
Davey, last opportunity. You're talking with fans maybe listening right now before home opener, 6 days away. What's the message?
Hey, we're coming, right? We're coming. It's going to be exciting. All I can say is I don't know the outcome of games. If I knew that, I'd be really, really rich.
Yeah, let me know.
I got a stop to make
on my way to the ballpark.
We're going to play hard for 27 outs, and I think our young kids are going to be exciting.
I like Davey talking in that conversation about giving Josiah Gray the nod on opening day. Look, he mentioned JoJo was an all-star last season, and I think that loomed large. He was the most credentialed starter in terms of 2023 performance. His worst spring outings over the last couple of years actually came kind of in succession, really, after he got the nod as the opening day starter. But I like that they are turning the page from Patrick Corbin as just kind of a 2019 grandfathered in lifetime achievement opening day start and making it more of a meritocracy where Gray was their best pitcher for much of last season. And they really want him to be an innings eating veteran that leads the way this year. So let's start with him on the hill.
Yeah, I mean, you know, last year, I think you could make an argument for Patrick Corbin because Josiah Gray hadn't established himself fully. Obviously, Mackenzie Gore is still a young guy. So you could, you know, make the argument for Patrick Corbin. This year, you couldn't make the argument really, in my opinion, for anyone other than Josiah Gray. He was an all-star last year. He finished with an ERA under 4. He was really good for the first half of the year. Struggled a bit after the all-star break, but then kind of locked it in for a final couple starts before the season ended. So he deserved it, and I'm glad that they went with him as the opening day starter.
Let's hear from Josiah Gray. This was as he got ready for the big event on the red carpet walk. Stopped by to say hello, and we had a nice conversation with him. I just love chatting with Josiah Gray, and you'll hear why pretty quickly in this convo.
Josiah Gray joins us now, the opening day starter for the Washington Nationals.
There he is.
Let's do this thing.
Guys. Yeah, man.
JoJo, all the way to the top of the rotation. So first of all, we're just talking about you're sharp with the shoes, no socks.
Loafers, no socks.
No socks.
Yeah.
I mean, when did that – this is now the only way to wear pants is like that they don't come to the shoes and there's no socks. It's the style.
Yeah, honestly, when I heard of the gala 2 years ago when I joined the Nats, I was like, I'll go outside the box a little bit. So went no socks, and ever since, everything fancy, I wear no socks.
It is sharp. Well, first of all, congrats, man.
Like, thank you.
Put it into words. How cool is it when you get the call into the office? You're like, am I in trouble? Like, it's like going to the principal, and then you get the good news. What's that like?
Yeah, it's a, you know, surreal experience. I think, you know, when you're growing up playing baseball, all you want to do is, you know, be the first one out there. And being able to get that recognition with Davey and the staff, it means a lot because I remember, you know, times where I wasn't that first guy out, you know, out the door. So I'm looking forward to it and ready for the challenge.
Will there be extra butterflies?
I think so. I think, you know, last year opening day hit me a little differently against the Braves. I don't know. It's just, you know, I kind of got, you know, emotional a little bit. So I think this year that might happen again. We'll see. But, you know, I got to keep the eye on the prize and go out there just trying to give the team a win.
How'd you feel about your spring?
Up and down. You know, I think early it started out really, really well. And, you know, I think that showed that, you know, my stuff has taken a step forward. But then there were some struggles, and I think that's the things we have to limit. You know, struggles are part of the game, but as long as, you know, we're not making a streak of 2 or 3 bad starts in a row and you have that rebound start, you know, I think we'll be in a good spot. So I think, you know, with the last outing I had, there was some good with some bad, but I'm looking forward to getting this going and, you know, starting the season out strong.
You stay in the lab. I mean, you are a guy that knows the analytics and tracks kind of your performance in that way. Mm-hmm. What were some of the tweaks either to the rotation or to the repertoire or just things you worked on this offseason? And B, kind of what's next for you in terms of stuff you're studying?
Yeah, so I'll dive into it a little bit. So up to this point in my big league career, you know, I dominated right-handed hitters and with, you know, really good stuff. But, you know, with the addition of a cutter, you know, I started to dominate left-handed hitters. So I took a step back against right-handed hitters. So this offseason, went in there, how do I, you know, maintain my pitching grips, you know, the consistency of those pitches? You know, how do I choose, you know, what fastball I want to go with on two strikes, because a lot of my hits with two strikes were off sinkers to right-handed hitters. So those kind of things, tweaking, okay, how can I put down right-handed hitters a little bit more efficiently like I did my first 2 years, and then improving and staying where we're at on lefties.
Who is your study partner on that stuff? I mean, are you just on, like, Fangraphs and Savant by yourself? Or do you have,
I mean, you know,
a guru?
With the addition of Doolittle and, you know, the guys we have behind the scenes, Dom Merlino, David Higgins, shout out those guys because they don't get recognized enough.
R&D department.
They give me a blueprint of, like, hey, this is really good. This can be really effective against these type of hitters. So, for me, I eat that up. You know, that information gives me a game plan of how I can approach every hitter. So I go with that.
Is it like grain of salt with Doolittle, though? Because he's like, right here, I throw a fastball. And then I throw a fastball to this guy, and then a fastball to that guy. No, I'm kidding. No. I mean, obviously, he knows so much. He's such a smart guy.
Yeah.
Is there a balance, though, for you, Josiah, where you go, obviously, I'm here because I'm really talented. You know what I mean? And you've got to do all this stuff in the lab to tweak it and improve it. Does there get to the point where, I don't want to say overkill, it's not the right word, but you know what I mean? Where's that line in terms of tweak versus let it eat?
It's a good question because, you know, you kind of get your talent is what gets you to the big leagues.
Yeah.
It's how you stay in the big leagues, how you, you know, adjust and refine your arsenal. So for me, there are definitely those moments where I'm like, I need to stop, you know, worrying about this pitch movement and just getting that guy out. And I think it's like that battle we play within ourselves of, like, you're always thinking, hey, if I would have thrown this pitch in this location, I would have got that out. But it's never like that, you know. So there's a fine balance of the both, but I think – the more practice you do in practice prepares you for the game, and, you know, kind of just looking forward to going out there and seeing what I can do again.
Josiah Gray of the Nationals, just a couple of moments left alongside the red carpet here as he gets ready to walk in and enjoy his night at the gala. Leave us behind and go hang with all his
Leave
boys.
The pudgy guys alone and go hang out with
you. Invited.
We were invited. It's the daughter's birthday, so okay. We're going and doing some and cake and ice cream.
And Fairfax County Public Schools, kids are on spring break.
Oh.
It's been 2 days. We're barely treading water, dude.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like inmates asylum, the whole nine yards. Yeah.
But I guess where we should end the conversation is, where are you at in your prep for the Reds? I mean, do you, like, already start studying and put a game plan together? Or what?
Yeah, so Cabern and I are going to talk tomorrow when we get into Cincinnati and kind of just chop it up and see what we got. You know, there are some things that they sent over the scouting guy sent over to me already on them. And, you know, I faced them once last year. So, sort of familiar. Obviously, younger lineup, kind of like us. A lot of guys trying to jump you early. They'll steal some bases. So, I have a good feel for who they are as a team. But it's just a matter of reacting to the game. How are they seeing? Are they swinging at first pitch breaking balls? Are they swinging at the elevated fastball? Like, those kind of things. Just fine-tuning it with the game.
It was a tale of two seasons for Josiah Gray last year. He was excellent before the All-Star break, was named an All-Star for his exploits. Post-All-Star break, very different. Just kind of string of starts for Josiah Gray. The walks popped up as an issue. More importantly, though, he just wasn't as consistent, wasn't getting as deep into starts. If you look at the splits pre-All-Star break, 18 outings, a 3.4 ERA. Post All-Star break, 12 starts, a 4.75 earned run average. His average against was actually about the same. His whip was just a little bit worse. So it's almost like, you know, he was just getting out of jams and kind of pitching, I don't want to say with more luck, but he was certainly striking out more batters, having just a little bit more success at the tightrope walk in tough spots. In the first half of the year, he's got to get back to that, or he's just got to pitch with fewer runners on.
Yeah, he was an escape artist last year. He was in so many different jams, even in the first half when he was, you know, named an All-Star and the numbers looked really good. He was getting out of jams that he was really putting himself in by walking a lot of guys, but he would find ways to get out. It was kind of crazy how he would maneuver out of these things because it's not as if his stuff is the most overpowering. So the way he was able to escape those things was magical. I'd like to see a lot less of those. They're fun. You know, seeing guys getting out of jams inning after inning is a lot of fun. It's really cool to see. You know, it pumps up the crowd when you got a bases loaded, two out jam, and, you know, Josiah Gray strikes out a guy and fist pumps as he walks off the mound. That stuff is awesome. Having a, you know, 1-2-3 inning is also awesome. And we need to see a lot more of those 1-2-3 innings from JoJo this year for him to take that next step. And I think he knows that. And I think a big part of that for him is limiting those walks.
Speaking of taking the next step, big year for Dylan Crews to take a huge step forward where he solidifies himself as a consistent star at the minor league level. And who knows, it could get him a call to the big leagues sometime around the middle of the year. He's 22 years old. He was the number two pick out of LSU. This was the conversation we had on Tuesday evening with Dylan Crews after he played in the Futures game as he gets ready to head to Double-A Harrisburg.
We're joined now by Dylan Crews, who got to play in today's Futures game, hit second in the order, patrolled the outfield. Dylan, it is great to see you again. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man.
Looking sharp.
Awesome.
Very sharp.
Thank you.
Very sharp.
I would think this is the first red carpet you've walked. Maybe you're in a movie I don't know about.
Yeah, definitely the first red carpet. I've had a few purple carpets, but
that's right.
This is awesome here. This is really cool.
How was playing at the park today? How was that?
It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, first time playing there for me. Getting a feel for everything, all you know, the outfield and you know, the backdrop for a hitter. So it was awesome to get out there and get acclimated and, you know, face like big league guys. It was a cool experience.
That was one thing as we watched the game, whether it was James, you in the outfield, you guys are out there for the first time trying to play caroms. Probably didn't even, you know, take fly balls much at all. What was that like? Just, you don't know how the ball's going to bounce or how things are going to go.
Yeah, it took a little bit to kind of get acclimated. We took a lot of fly balls in practice and in pregame. But yeah, it's a little weird out there, to be honest. But it's after we getting acclimated, it plays as true as it does out there.
You talking visually sun, or what do you mean weird?
Yeah, sun.
We've seen that for years. I mean,
yeah, sun monster, man. The right field.
It's
a real thing.
Bad it was out there, but yeah, the sun's a little bad. I mean, just a little things. I mean, you know, as prospects, we're not used to the backdrop of like behind home plate with the, you know, the 3-4 levels we got back there. So that's kind of something to get used to.
Is it because like the ball can blend in with stuff?
Seats and everything that. So, you know, reading off the bat, we kind of have to take a, you know, split second more to kind of just read off of it. But, you know, like I said, though, after taking the fly balls out there and pregame, it was very smooth. So.
Yeah. How'd you feel about your spring?
I felt good. I mean, the most important thing is I learned as much as I did there. You know, I wasn't trying to do anything special. You know, I was going out there trying to get as much information as I can from the coaching staff and the players, everybody there. You know, I felt it was a very, very good spring.
I think what you mentioned maybe before the game, if memory serves, Double-A Harrisburg to start the season.
Yep.
So kind of just expectations to get the year going, you finish there, and maybe some of your goals just to start fast here.
Yeah, I mean, just trying to get off to a good start, you know, in Harrisburg and see what happens. I think we got me, Hassel, and House out there in Harrisburg, so good group of guys, and we're going to go out there and play our best, play our ball, you know, our baseball. So it's going to be good. It's going to be fun, and, you know, we're used to that stadium, so it'll be good.
You were so utterly dominant as a college player. Like, the video game numbers with the difficulty turned off, dude. And it's not the difficulty wasn't turned off. It's ridiculous.
Got on base in every game.
I mean, it's just patently absurd numbers. What's been the biggest difference between there, that kind of stage, and now in pro ball, where sometimes you don't have as many eyes on you, which is a departure, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the pitching's obviously way better.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that you have to take note. So getting on pace every game probably isn't going to happen, you know, at the next level.
Let me write that down.
Yeah. We'll see, but it probably won't happen. But, you know, it's that's something you got to get used to as a pitching and how they're going to attack you. You know, they got notes on you all the way back, you know, even until college. Mm-hmm. So you got to take note to that, you know, work on your weaknesses and because they're going to attack it. And, it's, you know, the pitching, whatever, you know, whatever it is, it's just a little bit better than in college. You got to get used to that.
LSU superstar, Nats prospect, Dylan Crews. I forgot to ask you this at spring training. So here we are, another opportunity. Do you know Jaden Daniels at all?
We've talked a couple times, yeah.
There's a chance he comes to D.C. with the number two pick.
I know. I really hope he does. That'd be pretty cool. Amazing talent. I mean, just for a dual-threat guy that can run the ball and sling it like he does, I think it'd be a perfect fit for here. And
Do us a favor. Text him here. Let us know what he's hearing.
Yeah. No, we've talked a couple times. He's a good dude, man. He's a good dude.
What, just in terms, again, of that, something that we kind of sleep on is – that network of unbelievable athletic talent that you guys are like sharing a training room. Yeah. You know, like who did you see at LSU when you first got there? Where you're like, that's the superstar. Maybe not in your sport or otherwise, where you go, that guy's going to go somewhere and do something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jaden Daniels, obviously. One, but, you know, you got Skeens, Angel Reese, who's a phenomenal basketball player.
Right.
You can go down the list from basketball to baseball to football, track and field. I mean, it's just been so much talent that's come out of that place, and it's just getting better. You know, I feel like all the sports are gradually just getting better. You look at the rankings, most of them are, you know, in the top 10 rankings. So it's pretty special, and I think it's starting to become a serious powerhouse.
And you heard Cruz there, Toby, talk about the crew that's going to Harrisburg. So you're going to have very likely Trey Lipscomb and James Wood headline the Rochester Red Wings lineup at the AA level, at least to start the year. And maybe this changes if these guys get off to fast starts. Maybe they put them all at Rochester together to have them in one lineup. But Dylan Cruz, Robert Hassel, Brady House, surprised at all with the crew that they're sending to AA?
Not really. I mean, the thing is, House, I think, still needs some seasoning. I think that he's done well in the minor leagues. His big thing last year was staying healthy, and I think that was his big focus. Obviously, he had a good year last year, but I think his big focus was the health, and I think that's still going to be a thing. But now he was able to stay healthy last year. Now he's going to try to work on becoming, you know, a major league baseball player. Whereas, you know, Dylan Cruz, I think everything's there. It's just at some point has to slow down for him, and I think it's going to happen at some point this year. I can't tell you when. That's why I think it's kind of hard when you're trying to figure out, you know, when is he going to be up? When does he start hitting? When does he finally have that thing click? And sometimes it's something as small as a little tweak in a batting stance. Something just happens different in the cage, and you all find something. I think for him, it's just once everything starts to click, I think it's going to be the floodgates open, and he's got a week where he goes on a tear, maybe a month he goes on a tear, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's the Dylan Cruz that was drafted number 2 overall. Because I think a lot of Nats fans are looking over to Texas and seeing the success of Wyatt Langford and thinking, well, don't worry. It's still so early on the Dylan Cruz train, and I'm all aboard. I think that he's going to be a fantastic ball player. Just give him a little bit of time.
I guess my surprise is Robert Hassel being at AA.
Yeah.
I would have thought he'd have been at AAA. He played 107 games in A-ball, 103 games at A+, and he's already played over 130 games at AA. Plate appearances, 498, 478, and almost 600 now, 598 at the three levels, and they're sending him back. I think he could be ticketed very quickly if he gets off to a decent start at AAA. Sometimes, you know, you've got to work the numbers based on, like, who, you know, what veterans you have as well that are in the minor leagues and whatnot. So no harm, no foul having him in Harrisburg, but I am a little bit surprised by that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Bang, zoom. All right, let's bring in producer Darris Dameron and play an over-under game here where he'll give us some totals. We're going to have to pick one side or the other.
All right, guys, thanks for having me. Let's start with our home run leader from last year. Lane Thomas hit 28 home runs last year in a breakout season for him. Let's set the over-under at 27.5 and see if he can repeat that. Over-under 27.5 home runs for Lane Thomas.
I'm going to go under. I loved the year he had last year. I was surprised kind of every step of the way, and I'm now at a point where I just think I slept on Lane Thomas. I think he's a really good ball player. He's a not only a good major leaguer, but he, you know, he was a fringe all-star last year. I think 28 homers is about the apex for him. Things got to go pretty well. Now, he did that without essentially any home runs in April. So if he turned up the heat a little earlier on, he would have even hit 30. But I'll say he hits 23 to 25, something like that. I think he'll have a very solid year, hit 275, you know, have an OPS in the 760 to 780 range, something like that. But I think some of last year's, you know, all-star caliber play maybe comes back to the middle of the pack a little bit.
Yeah, I think 25 is the number, somewhere around there. So I'm going to go under as well. I'm excited about what he can do this year. I think he's going to be a fantastic player once again. And, you know, I'd love for him to kind of get, you know, get the all-star nod this year, right? Like last year, I felt like he deserved it. Josiah Gray got it, and Josiah Gray was awesome, but felt like Lane Thomas kind of got robbed there. I'd like for him to have another really good first half so he can get the all-star nod. But that being said, I think 25 homers, that's under the 27.5.
It's easy for Lane Thomas to get hits when the guy in front of him is stealing 47 bags in 2023. C.J. Abrams, the leadoff guy. Let's set his over-under for stolen bags at 49.5, a little bit of an improvement over what he did last year. 49.5 over-under stolen bases for C.J. Abrams.
All right. Well, I'm going to go a little bit bold here. I think he goes for 60. I really think he goes for 60. So that's well over. I think he's going to be a base stealing demon this year. Like last year, he was 47 of 51. I think that's something that slept on. 47 stolen bases is awesome. 47 stolen bases when you've only get caught four times on top of that is even better, because that means I feel really good about giving you the green light, because you're not getting caught. You're not getting thrown into outs. And I think you saw the aggression that he had in the second half last year. And I think it was 25 straight attempts where he didn't get caught with the new rules and everything in there. I don't see a reason that CJ doesn't blow past that 47 number and not just go for 50, but I think 60 is really in reach there. And, you know, when we were talking in the clubhouse, Jacob Young, I think, had mentioned 60 stolen bases as a goal for him and CJ Abrams. So if they're setting a goal for something like that, even if it's something that CJ hasn't said, I'm sure he's looking at a pretty stupid high number. I think he goes for 60.
Yeah, I would also point out, because I'm over as well, 60 is bullish. There's no doubt. And you mentioned that that's aggressive and kind of a you know, bold prediction. I'll say mid 50s, right? I think he could steal 53, 55 bags. Last year, he was on an insane heater. I mean, he stole a base almost every other game for the final 70 games of the year. He had 33 bags. I don't think he'll have that type of second half. I think it's really, really hard to go 33 of 35. As you said, and at one point, nearly 30 steals in a row without getting thrown out. And a couple of those, I think, got overturned to his benefit after he was called out initially. So a lot of those bang-bang plays went his way. Having said that, here's why I'm over. Before the All-Star break, he played in 81 games. He had 14 steals. And if I remember correctly, he had like three or four steals in the two games right before the All-Star break. I want to say he had like seven in the week or maybe 8 or 9 days leading up to the break. He had like doubled his total. He basically stole, I don't know, 5 to 7 bases at the top of my head in the first 75 games of the year. And then for the final, you know, 85 or so games that he played, he stole close to 40. So I view it as he's going to start the season in that aggressive mode that he basically turned on when he got to the leadoff spot. So I'll go over that number as well. As long as he hits, last year it was 245 or so, you know, got on base right around 30% of the time. I mean, what if he hits 275 or 280? You know, what if he, instead of a 300 on base, what if we're talking about a 315 or a 320 on base? All of a sudden now 60 is very much in play. So he should theoretically continue to get better. I think over last year's total would be a good prediction.
So far, that leadoff guy, C.J. Abrams, has 20 career home runs. 18 of them came last year. Let's set his over-under for home runs in 2024 at 19.5 for C.J. Abrams.
I want this to be over. I do. I could see it being over if he played, you know, 150-plus games. It'd be almost borderline disappointing if he doesn't add a little more power, you know, another year older, another year with a little more man strength. I'm going to go under. I think he could end up being a 17 to 20 home run guy like we saw last year, and that's kind of where it ends up. But it's 65 or, you know, 70 steals in his peak season or something insane like that. I know that's crazy to say out loud, but I'll say he steals 17 or 18, or excuse me, hits 17 or 18 homers and is more of a, you know, he's getting on base a little better. He's hitting for a little more average with a little less power.
I'm going to go over here, Jeeps. I'm going to go over and say 20 and 60 is a real possibility. And I know it's kind of bullish. Ooh. And I just feel like this is a breakout season for C.J. Abrams, because that power that you saw at the second half of last year and some of the most memorable moments of last year were C.J. Abrams just hitting bombs. And it wasn't wall scrapers. I think he's going to run into more this year, because a lot of the stuff that you remember was 1 month in July. And he had some moments the rest of the year, but that 1 month of July really kind of carried his numbers. If he's able to do it over a couple months or just be a little bit more consistent, I think that he can have a fantastic year this year. I think you're looking at the guy who's going to be the Nationals Player of the Year this year, C.J. Abrams. I think 2060 sounds crazy, but I think by the end of the year, maybe he doesn't reach those numbers. Maybe he sits at, you know, an 18 home runs again, and maybe he sits at a 55 stolen bags. But I don't think it's stupid to just look at big numbers and think that he can't achieve it. I mean, this is a guy that needs to take that next step. I think last year, you know, on a really good ball club, I think that C.J. Abrams' year last year was encouraging, but I think, I don't know that it was anything more than that. I think because of where the Nationals are, we kind of propped up what he did last year, just maybe a little bit more than you would on a really good ball club. So I think for him to really encourage the fan base, really take that next step, if he wants to be a superstar, and all the things that we've heard this spring training are pointing to him possibly being that guy, then he's got to have a really good year this year. So why not 2060?
You heard from your opening day starter, Josiah Gray, earlier in this podcast, live from the red carpet at the Nationals Gala. He finished last year with a 3.91 ERA. We're going to set his over-under for ERA at 3.85. Over-under 3.85 ERA for Josiah Gray.
I love JoJo. I'm excited he's getting the ball for opening day. To me, this has to be an over, because too often he puts himself in jams. And if he can fix that, if he can have one of those outings, I remember talking about this a bunch last year on the pod. It was something where it's like, can JoJo just have an outing where he goes six innings and it doesn't feel stressful and it's just kind of run of the mill, five, six hits, one or two walks, a couple strikeouts, two earned runs. Can we just have one of those outings? But instead, it's stuff like we saw in spring training where he's walking seven guys and somehow gets out of there with only one run. If you keep doing that, at some point you're going to get burnt. And I think you saw a little bit of that in the second half last year, and you heard the numbers. It was over four, almost five ERA last year in the second half. So I'd like to take the under here. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think he flirts a little bit too much with danger. I think he floats around that four again and somewhere, but he's going to end up over 385.
Yeah, I'm over as well. I think right around four is about right. He, to me, is, and you know, he's probably my favorite player on the team when I take the whole package into account in terms of like dude off the field. And I think he's so sharp and well-read and just a pleasant guy and friendly. I just love the dude. But having said that, some of what you just said is true. Like, I think he nibbles, and, you know, he's not always going to just go out and attack. And there's going to be starts where he's throwing, you know, five and six different pitches to get through. And he is a craftsman in a lot of ways. I mean, he is a true pitcher. He's not just going to go out and rely on 95, 96, the way Mackenzie Gore might. So I think it's probably going to be up around four. You know, I think his ceiling is probably like a number three starter. He's probably more of a four to me, honestly, which it sounds disrespectful. I don't mean it that way at all. And I think he's a legitimate long-time answer for the Nationals and a really, you know, good starter of the future for them. And I'm thrilled that he's starting on opening day. I think Gore's got a higher upside, though. Of the guys in the org right now, there's nobody, I'd say, other than Gore that has a higher potential than Josiah Gray, which makes him, for the moment, essentially like their number two starter long-term until they iron some things out. We'll see where Cavalli ends up coming back to health. But I'll say over 3.85 narrowly. I'd be disappointed if his ERA is over four, but I want to see him get to a point where he can just lower the base runners, cut down on walks, and maybe there's a little recency effect, even though it was spring training, with what was a couple real tough outings in a row to end camp.
You just mentioned Mackenzie Gore. He'll take the ball for us for our home opener against the Pittsburgh Pirates. He finished last year in 27 starts with a 4.42 ERA. Let's set it a little lower than that. I'm going to set it at 3.99. Can Mackenzie Gore finish with an ERA under 4?
I'm buying Mackenzie Gore stock this season. I am under 3.99. I just said this about Gray, but I would underline it with Mackenzie. I'll be really disappointed if his ERA is over 4. At some point, you just kind of want to kick it on overdrive if you're Mac. And he got to the big leagues with the Padres going back 2 years ago for like 10 starts early in the season. He had one of the best ERAs in the National League. Then he got hurt, and it kind of wasn't the same after. Last year was very inconsistent, where he was excellent a lot of the time. But as he joked on this podcast, he would give up what he called some touchdowns, where he'd give up these 6 or 7 run games and the ERA paid for it. I want to see him get away from some of those huge innings, some of those crooked numbers. The stuff's just too good. I mean, what he had today, forget who he was pitching against, to see him in the game against the minor leaguers, sitting 96 to 97, touching 98, working 3 pitches, both sides of the plate. Like, there's really no reason this guy can't become one of the better starters in the NL East. So I'm excited. I'm buying stock. I'll say sub 3.9.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the stuff. Like, if you want to bring up the fact that he was facing a Dylan Cruz or a Robert Hassel, just go back and look. Last year, you were getting the same swings from Austin Riley and Matt Olson. Like, his fastball is fantastic when it's on. His stuff is just so good. Like, there's a reason why this guy was once a top pitching prospect in all of baseball, and you can see it on a night-in, night-out basis by just looking at the stuff. My issue with Gore, you already mentioned it, is can he get out of his own head? The thing with Gray, it feels like sometimes he just nibbles and he ends up walking guys. I don't think it's something where he's in his head. I think with Mackenzie Gore, it is something where it's more of a mental thing than anything else, where it's you might struggle a bit. That doesn't mean that a 1-run inning or a 2-run inning needs to turn into a 4- and a 5-run inning. It's how can you get out of this jam? How can you figure out? And then don't let it carry over to the next inning, because how many times did a Max Scherzer or a Steven Strasburg give up 2 runs in the first inning and then nail it down from there? And I don't know that we've seen that maturity yet from Mackenzie Gore. So I'm still going to say over, but I think it's going to be slightly over. I think it's going to be like a 405, like a 410. And that doesn't mean he can't have a good season, but I think there's still going to be a chance for some of those blowups that are really going to hurt the ERA. Maybe he's really, a 3.8, 3.7 pitcher, but he ends up with an ERA over 4 because one outing he gives up 8 runs or something like that. So I think there's going to be a couple of those outings that'll hurt it. So I'm going to go over.
All right. We'll be real quick with these last two here. James Wood, will he debut before or after the 1st of June?
Yeah, I'm going to go bold here. I went bold with CJ Abrams. I'm going to go bold with James Wood. I think if he can continue this going, which I think he's going to into AAA in Rochester, I think he's going to be up in May sometime. I mean, there's no reason not to, as much as we talked about Trey Lipscomb being, really good and should have made the roster, James Wood was the best player maybe in all of spring training. He had the highest OPS among qualified hitters in all of Major League Baseball. So if he continues doing that, call him up, give him a shot.
I'm going beyond, over, after, later, whatever the word would be. I'd love to be wrong. I think it'll be mid-June, late June, something like that. It should be, if he's playing well at AAA, late April, early May. But I'll just kind of play the opposite side of this and be overly patient, I suppose, and cautious, and say they take their time.
All right. And then the win total in Vegas is set at 66.5. What do you guys got? Over, under 66.5 for the 2024 Washington Nationals?
I'm going to go over that. I don't think by a lot. What did they win? 71 games last year. I'll say upper 60s. I don't think they win the same number as they did last season, 71. But I'll say 69, nice, or 68, something like that. I'm going to go upper 60s. I'll go over the total. I don't think they're as bad as people think. I also think the reinforcements are coming. The kids are going to make some splash contributions when they get there.
Yeah, I'm going to go 70 wins. I think it's going to end up over, but I don't think it's going to be anything where they take a huge step in terms of wins and losses from last year. But I think that's okay, because I think that next year is the time where they can take that next step in terms of actual on-field performance in terms of wins and losses. So I think this year they end up right around the same mark. But a lot of it, again, like you said, is when the reinforcements get there, they have to get established. They have to learn how to play at the big league level. Like, I think there's still a lot of learning to do, as well as seeing, you know, Gore and Gray and Abrams and Ruiz and all the young guys take that next step. So I think last year, the second half, they really overachieved, which was awesome and something that was super fun to do. But I don't know that they can do that over a full 162. So I think about 70 wins is about right.
From your words, your no, that's not the saying. Let me think of the saying. From your mouth to the standings is ears. I think that's the way the saying goes, something like that. Well done, producer Darris. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Thanks, guys. Let's get ready for 2024 Washington Nationals baseball.
For my guy, Darris Dameron and Grant Paulson, I'm Toby Altizer. That's going to do it for episode 103 of Bustin' Loose Baseball. Nationals baseball is back, baby.